Welcome to Career Tools. This week, getting results in a matrix, the big picture. The questions this class answers are, when I work in a matrix, where should I be looking for my goals? When I work in a matrix, how do I deal with two or more managers? And when I work in a matrix, what should I know about communication?
As a manager, it's your responsibility to groom a second in command. One day you'll have to leave your team to move on to bigger and better things. Don't leave them in the lurch. Leave them with someone who's been groomed to take over. Bringing your 2IC with you to the Effective Manager Conference is the ideal way to train them to be a Manager Tools manager. Sign up today at manager-tools.com/training and let us train them for you.
Matrices are difficult to work in. They make a whole lot of sense on paper. So for anyone who doesn't know what a matrix is, which is plural matrices, so we're going to use both words, it's not very obvious that matrix would become matrices, I don't think, or at least it wasn't when I was typing. So this is a way organizations organize the people that work for them, and they organize them in a kind of crosshatch. A linear organization, you have people on the bottom, you have their managers above that, you have managers above that, you have directors above that, and the organization chart looks like a pyramid. But for some organizations, it's practical to work in a matrix. So a matrix is a square organization chart, and down the left-hand side, you might have things like legal and accounting and HR. Those are kind of the functional sections. And then across the top, you might have like certain countries or certain industry areas that your company serves. And so someone from HR serves each of those industries, and kind of in the square where they meet, that's what that person is serving. So they might be HR in country A or HR in country Z. And it kind of looks like a square. So what happens is the people in it work for two managers. Their functional manager, who is the person who manages the actual skill they have, and then they have a project manager or a country manager or something like that, who's managing kind of a team of people with lots of different skills. And the thing is, it looks great on paper. It's much harder to work in, because any time you have two bosses, it's not just twice the trouble. It's much more than that. And Mark sometimes says we don't give advice for situations we don't recommend, and we don't recommend matrices. But we have to admit that there's a lot of people who work in matrices. And so we're going to try and help people out by starting with a kind of big picture of how to get results in a matrix. We're going to kind of try and help people be oriented to the things that are important. And then later in this series, we'll go into some more details. So what's our outline?
All right, our outline for today is figuring out who writes your review, then getting your goals, and setting a minimum communication frequency. Now, Wendy, as you said, in a matrix, people generally have two managers. So the functional manager is the manager of a team of people who all do the same thing and have the same type of role, the same activity. So, for example, software architects or planning engineers. Whereas a project manager manages a project and the people working on it, and those people will all have different sorts of skills. They all have a different skill, a different task. In general, functional managers tend to be the ones who write the reviews because they have got the longer term relationship with that employee.
Right. Let's try an example. So let's imagine Brian is a software architect and he works for John on a project for the Bank of America. So John is the project manager, and that project could last a week or several years. And Brian might work on it for a week, or he might work on it for several years. You know, people come in and out of the project according to the skills that are needed on that project at that time. But then Brian also works for Zoe, who is his actual boss. And Zoe manages a team of software architects. And so Brian reports to her all the time, even when he's working on other projects. So he would see John on a day-to-day basis because John is his project manager and John's the one who is looking at what he's doing every day or every couple of days, depending on how that works. But when he leaves that project, he would leave John and go to somebody else, some other project manager. But he wouldn't leave Zoe because Zoe manages him functionally. So he'll always stay in this team of software architects that Zoe is managing, but he'll go in and out of the project teams. And it's Zoe who's responsible for making sure Brian has actual work to do. So in a lot of matrices, there's this team of skills, so a team of software architects, and then there's 20 projects going on. And it's the functional manager's job to supply those skills for each of the projects. So if project C comes along and says, I need 4 software architects for 3 months, it's Zoe's job to work out, okay, I've got my team, some of them are working on projects, some of them are not, and which ones am I going to send over to project C, which ones are the most appropriate? She needs to shuffle some resources and move people on and off of projects, but it's her job to fill the need for software architects for all the different project managers. And sometimes that means that one of her software engineers might not be needed on any particular project at one time, and that's often called being on the bench. So that person is just sitting there waiting to be needed, almost.
Absolutely.
And so while they're waiting to be needed, they often go on training, they often go to pitch their skills, they sometimes go with sales to pitch for client work. People who are on the bench can be used in different ways, but hardly ever are they actually being used as a software engineer or a software architect if they're on the bench. So Zoe has to make sure that Brian has work to do, that he goes to the right training, that he gets the right opportunities. So part of the balancing act for a functional manager is to look at her staff and say, okay, I have these 3 projects that need people. Who shall I send over there who can do the job but could benefit from the experience? Or they have to fill the need, but they also want to balance people's careers. And, you know, if Brian's done 10 short-term projects and he would like a long-term one, so he knows where he's going for the next year, like maybe that would be something Brian would say to Zoe, like, hey, next time there's something that's a bit longer term, I'd really like to do it. And so when the next need comes along, Zoe's got to balance like everybody's skills and what they need in terms of career development and what they want. So being a functional manager is a really hard job, and we'll maybe talk about that another day. But for Brian, he has to know, I work for Zoe, but I also work for John, the project manager. And these functional managers are sometimes called career managers. And that's kind of a way to encourage directs to have a good relationship with that person. It's really easy on a day-to-day basis for Brian not to have to talk to Zoe. Until he comes to the end of the project, that's the only reason he would really have to talk to her. And yet, Zoe, that person, is writing his review, and that person is controlling his career. And so to only speak to them when you're at the end of a project is just madness. But that's what people do. So calling them a career manager sometimes is done just to encourage people to keep a good relationship with that person.
But you're absolutely right, Wendy. On a day-to-day basis, in Brian's world, John is the person he goes to. Right? John is the person who tells him what meetings he needs to go to, what work he needs to work on that day, what his deadlines are in the moment. John needs to know what Brian's doing and when results are expected, because John is tracking the project itself. So without that type of information, without keeping a firm grasp on what Brian is doing, John, the project manager, can't run his project properly. So if you're Brian, you might think, why should I talk to Zoe? Like, as you said, John is the most important person in your world right now.
It's kind of the squeaky wheel gets the grease. John is the squeaky wheel and so becomes the most important person, but really, maybe shouldn't be.
Exactly. Because, of course, Zoe is the one that is going to write Brian's review. And reviews drive performance rankings, career opportunities, raises. You said yourself, Zoe's the one who controls what projects he's going to be on next. Brian doesn't have to deliberately ignore Zoe, just not keeping her up to date on what he's doing is going to lead to an inferior relationship with her, right? It's not that he's doing anything. Just by not focusing on her as well, it will lead to a decrease in their relationship, and also an inferior review will come out of it.
Right.
So he needs to focus on both.
People don't write you good reviews if they don't know what you've been doing. Right?
Exactly.
So one way to think about this is that one person has to know everything you've done for them. If you're in Brian's position, you work in a matrix, one of the people you work for has to know everything you've done for them. It's usually the project manager or the country manager or whatever. One person has to know everything you've done, and that's your functional manager or a career manager, because one person only needs to know what you've done for them for their project, right? That's what John needs to know. But Zoe needs to know what you've done across all the projects in a year in order to write your review. She needs to know the other stuff that you've done on top of the project work. So like if you helped her out on another project and you were still working for, you know, if you're working for one project and yet you're helping out with another one, right? Good score for teamwork there, right? Mm-hmm. If you went on a course for self-management or management or, you know, any course, right? Self-development, yeah, that's on everybody's review. So if you do that, you want to make sure that your career manager knows about that. If you've been hosting lunch and learns, you know, training others is often on people's reviews. So, you know, those lunch and learns, your career manager needs to know about so that you get credit for it on your review.
For sure. And if you're putting in efforts that benefit the company, like in those examples, it's not to the benefit of the project. So the project manager, or John in this example, no offense, but John doesn't actually care.
He's like, it's my project. It's all about me. This is what I need to know.
Also, if you weren't doing those things, you could do more work for me. That's the thing. It's not that it doesn't matter. It's just that John doesn't care. That's not what he's for. That's not the work he's driving, that he's steering. So we need to make sure, Brian needs to make sure, that his functional manager, Zoe, knows that information because she is the one that cares. She's the one writing the review. Which means if you work in a matrix, the first question that you need to ask is, who writes your review? The second question is, do they know everything that you're doing? Because if they don't, you're doing yourself a disservice. That person is the one that writes your reviews. And if you want them to know, or you want the organization to know how you're doing, what projects you should be looked at for future, your functional manager needs to know that kind of information.
Exactly. That's the first place where people go wrong in matrices. People hate working in matrices generally, just because it's too hard to have two masters. And the easiest thing to do is just to talk to the person that you talk to every day and ignore the other person. And that's a recipe for disaster. So once you've decided who writes my review and you're going to keep up with them, the next thing is get your goals. And we have a whole bunch of podcasts about goals and goal setting, in part because they're really important. And it's not just that they're important because achieving your goals is really what getting your work done means. When people say, are you getting your work done? What they really mean is, are you achieving your goals? But it's also important because it's what goes on your review.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody sits down at the beginning of the year and they do their review, and then their boss says, okay, we need some goals for next year. And everybody sits down and writes their goals. And we can debate whether reviews are fair, whether they're really based on goals, whether there's politics going into your scores, like, which is probably the answer is yes, whether doing annual reviews is the best way to manage a company. We can argue about all those things. But if you are in a company that has annual reviews or a review system and it has goals, if you hit your goals, your review might not reflect it in the way that you want it to, right? Because of the system of the company. But if you don't hit your goals, then you can guarantee your review will be bad. Right? That's the important thing. If you don't hit them, you know what the outcome will be. If you do hit them, we hope for a positive outcome. We hope for what you want. And sometimes that doesn't happen because of a million different things that are going on in an organization. But you want to hit your goals because that puts you in a much better position.
Exactly. And what we end up seeing most often in matrix-type organizations is that, for that reason, professionals have two types of goals, right? There's the goals from the project manager, the short-term goals, the things when you say, when do you need it done? If the answer is, I need it last week, that's your project manager type of goal, right? Deadlines for those goals, for the project manager goals, are probably no more than 2 weeks out. And they're likely much shorter than that if you've got a good project manager, right? We all know every project is at risk by the length of its longest deliverable. They're giving you tasks, they're going to be very short deadlines. Whereas goals from the functional manager are usually monthly or quarterly, even annually sometimes,
yeah.
Right? They're much longer term goals. So something like this. Let's imagine that we're partway through January right now. So a list of goals from a project manager, project goals could look like finish sign-on module by 5 p.m. Tuesday the 16th, find bugs in customer profile module by 5 p.m. Wednesday the 17th, correct bugs in customer profile module by 5 p.m. Thursday the 18th, and smoke test customer profile module by 5 p.m. on Friday the 19th. Really short-term goals in quick succession. Whereas functional-type goals could sound like attend the running a project office training session by June 31st. Mentor Samuel for the first 6 months of the year. Assist with onboarding for one student cohort by the end of the year. And teach Rachel how to create the monthly reports on the in-house software by March 31st. Much longer term goals, right? Some of these things you've got the entire year to accomplish, right? Or there's one here, a mentor Samuel for 6 months of the year, right? So it's longer term or more ongoing type goals would be the types of things that come from your functional manager.
And here's what happens. You are working on that sign-on module that's due in 2 days, 3 days, whatever. It's very short. And it turns out to be a complete nightmare. And you work until 11 o'clock at night, and suddenly you find there's a misplaced comma in your code, and that's what's messing you up. And you're just like, oh my God, I can't believe that's what it was, because those misplaced commas drive me mental. So when Rachel says, Rachel, who you're supposed to be teaching how to do the report, so when she says, hey, is this a good time to look at the reports? You say, no, I can't do it. I've just found what's wrong with this. I've just got today to fix it. Let's do it next month, and I'll do them this month. It'll be much quicker for me to do them, and I'll show you next month. And then the next month, some other detail gets in the way. And then the next month, some other detail gets in the way. And then you're too busy with the smoke testing for the customer profile, and so you cancel your meeting with Samuel, and you rebook it for the next week, and then you rebook it again. And you book yourself onto a course, and then you cancel it at the last minute because something happens in your smoke test, it all goes wrong. And so you can't go to the course, and then you go to rebook it, and then it's not being run again this year. You know, sometimes we get that from people who are signing up to go to our public conferences. They'll say, oh, I'm in whatever city and I need to go on training by the end of the year. And we're like, and we say, yeah, we've been there 3 times and we're not going again.
We're not coming back.
Until next year. So yeah, if you need that for your annual goal, you need to travel. So when it comes to your review, all you can say to Zoe is, well, I got all my project stuff done. I fixed that customer module. I did the smoke testing. I found the bugs, whatever. But no, I never taught Rachel how to do the report because there was always something more important. I didn't really, you know, I was mentoring Samuel for 6 months, but I really only met him 3 times. Yeah, I couldn't get onto that training course. I tried, but I couldn't make it. And so the person who is your functional manager, the person who's writing your reviews, who really doesn't care whether that customer module got smoke tested or not, but cares that her boss told her that every member of her staff had to go on at least one training course this year, and you didn't, now she's mad.
Yeah.
And your review is going down the drain.
She's writing your review.
Right? Because you haven't hit any of the longer term goals, and the person who's writing your review cares about the longer term goals. Mostly because those are her goals from her boss.
Exactly. So for this reason, guys, you need to put all of your goals in one place on one list, because otherwise they're going to get lost. That way, when you review it weekly, you're looking at all of the things that you need to do. If you don't, you're going to get swept up with what's short term. We all want to pay attention to the fire that's right in front of us, instead of the small burning ember that's off in the background. But you're going to get off track with your long-term goals if you only ever focus on the short term. Part of being a professional is being able to balance competing priorities with different timelines, being able to deal with those short-term in-the-moment deadlines, but also at the same time tracking and maintaining those longer-term deadlines. You need to be planning your short-term in order to give you the time to be able to do your long-term. It's just like your review. If you plan your short-term activities with an eye to having a week off so that you can go on that training course, things will go wrong because you're procrastinating. And sometimes you're going to have to cancel and you're going to have to reschedule. However, if you don't plan, you're never going to go on the course at all. Take it from us, people who have been there, it's going to happen. Put all of your goals on one list in one place so that you can track them.
If you don't plan, it won't happen. If you plan, it may not happen. But if you don't plan, it definitely won't happen. We've talked about the person who's writing our reviews and the goals that they've set for us and making sure that we're hitting them. So there's one more kind of component to making sure that we get a good review. Or no, it doesn't need to be a review. It's like, you know, have a good relationship with the person who's managing our career. And that is communication frequency. And so what we want to do is set a minimum communication frequency. We'll tell you what that is in a minute. Because if you leave it to your unconscious, your communication will go the way of your goals. You end up communicating frequently with your project manager because the things that you are doing for them require frequent communication. And of course, if he's a good project manager, you're having maybe daily project meetings, stand-up, scrum, you know, whatever you're calling them. And all that daily, hourly, minute-by-minute communication will make you feel like you're communicating a lot. And you are, just not with the right person, or at least
that's the thing.
Not the person who has a big impact on your career. When you think about how much am I communicating, your brain doesn't separate it by person. It just says, I did nothing today but talk to people on the phone and send emails. I must have been communicating a lot, right? Mm-hmm. But you need to look at the difference between, or at least you need to separate out the communication you're doing for each person and then look at the frequency.
Exactly. And remember, that functional manager, that person that does write review, sometimes they've got projects of their own that they're working on. They may not be project managers for clients or for specific accounts or things that are going on. But they've got things like corporate readiness training and recruitment to do. Their goals are there. They just seem different. And they forget to communicate with you too, because they're busy. And they also feel like, I have been communicating with people all day long. So do seek that one person out. I don't need to. We communicate all the time. You can't rely on someone else to be the communication driver, especially for something that's so important for you. If you don't drive the communication, you're not relying on that person to communicate with you to maintain your relationship, but you're letting that person who isn't talking to you push your career forward. That's the person that's writing your review. That's the person that's advocating for you. So if you're not going to make the effort to communicate with them, why should they make the effort to communicate with you?
Why would you leave something important, so important, up to someone else? It makes no sense.
Yeah, that's the person that you rely on for your career. You have to set a minimum frequency to speak with your functional manager, and you've got to get it on your task list and your calendar. And we'd suggest that you speak to that person on the phone at least weekly, if you can, monthly, have a face-to-face meeting with them. Chances are you may be at a distance from them. Even if you're on a client site, you can go into home office for breakfast, right? Meet with your functional manager occasionally, and then show up at your client site slightly later, one day that week or whatever it may be. And you can't tell us that the client expects you to be there all the time. They always do. All clients do. And they all do. And yet, consultants still come in and out on their own timetable all the time. You've got other meetings to hold. You need to take care of your career. And having a meeting, a one-on-one with your functional manager on a regular basis is the way to look out for your own best interests.
And if you can't meet in person, then you have a monthly meeting on your calendar that's by phone, that's a little bit longer. So weekly, maybe you do 20 minutes, 30 minutes. We would suggest if your boss isn't doing one-on-ones, then you might want to follow that format that that we have a cast for people whose bosses aren't doing one-on-ones with them called professional updates. You might want to look at that for an agenda. And so weekly you have 30 minutes and then once a month you make it 45 minutes. And so like a one-on-one, it would be some time for them, some time for you, and then 10 minutes for the future. If that person is going to decide what project you go on next or what training you go on next, why wouldn't you want to, once a month, talk to them for 10 minutes about what you want out of that? And you know, goals are always, or the things you get in organizations are always a balance between what you want and what the organization needs. So you don't always get what you want. But again, if you don't express what you want, you aren't going to get it. It's not
exactly.
And don't forget to have reviewed the goals that your functional boss has set you before those calls and be able to report on your progress. Because to Zoe, to go back to Zoe, what we had at the beginning, to Zoe, if she has 10 people who are all working on different projects, and one person once a week says, hey, I'm working on this project, this is how it's going, this is how I've met with Samuel this week, I met with Rachel and I did the handover of the reports, we're going to meet again next month and I'm going to watch her do it. If she's thinking, okay, I'm good, Brian's getting his stuff done, no, I'm going to go ride the back of somebody who isn't getting their stuff done. And when they come to the end of the year and she's like, wow, who got their stuff done? You're the one that comes to mind. So make sure you've reviewed the goals and make sure you talk about them on that call.
Mm-hmm. So in summary, guys, matrices make life easier for the organization. They make it harder for individuals. And that's a good thing for you. If you can be the professional who balances the relationship with both their project manager and their functional manager, who receives and achieves goals that are set by both of those managers and communicates well with both of them, you are going to stand out. Again, it's not built for the success of the individual. Many people struggle with it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do a good job, you will be an oddity. You will, in the land of the blind, be the one-eyed man. And in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king.
I did recruitment for a team that worked this way. I worked for recruitment, and then there were a bunch of functional managers. And recruitment meant helping the functional managers find people to go onto the different projects. And so many people did this so badly. We would go to the functional managers and say, hey, what's Jim doing? And they were like, oh, yeah, I don't really know. Well, is he coming to the end of the project? Can we use him over here? Well, I don't know. Does he have these skills? I don't know. It was awful, but there's a huge opportunity if you can do it well.
Absolutely there is.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you, Wendy.
Bye, everyone. That's it for this week. Please come back next week and we'll have more guidance for you.